welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author is Mr. Roy Shulman, author of Salvation is from the Jews, published by Ignatius Press. Welcome, Roy, to EWTN's Thanks. Bookmark.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Many of our audience would remember you being on several months ago with Father Mitch on EWTN Live, where you talked about this particular work, subtitled The Role of Judaism in Salvation History, from Abraham to the Second Coming. We had a very positive reaction to you being on the show and to this book in particular, and also your conversion story, which I think will be a great journey home program someday for us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, just quick, so people understand where you're,
okay,
where
sure.
you're coming from and where the book came from.
Sure. I grew up in a suburb of New York City, the child of German-Jewish Holocaust refugees. Had a fairly devout Jewish upbringing and took my Judaism very seriously. At one point, even living and traveling with a Hasidic rabbi, looking into the most observant form of Judaism. Then I went to MIT, undergraduate, fell away from religion, became fairly agnostic, went to Harvard Business School, and ended up joining the faculty there as a professor at Harvard Business School at the age of 30. By then, religion had really fallen by the wayside. But I received several extraordinary graces, somewhat miraculous interventions from heaven. In the first one, God essentially revealed his presence to me in a direct way. And I found myself...
Was that on Cape Cod? You had that reference at the end of the book.
I will...
Snippet of your story,
I didn't
right?
mean to shortchange it.
Right.
I was feeling somewhat kind of depressed at the time because I had reached this level of worldly success as a, as I said,
at a fairly young age,
at 30,
too, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But nothing filled the emptiness inside. And I was still deeply hungering for some transcendent meaning in life as I had been... you know, 15 years earlier, and none of these worldly successes had even begun to scratch that itch. So I was in that kind of gloom when I was walking in nature on Cape Cod, and I sort of fell into heaven. I found myself in the immediate presence of God, looking back on my life as though I were looking back on my life after death in the presence of God. I saw everything that I would be happy about and everything that I would wish I had done differently. And the two predominant aspects of that experience was that I became aware of the infinite sea of love with which I was held every moment of my existence by this all-loving God.
Right, but you weren't sure who it was. You even said, let me know your name. You say it could be Buddha, Krishna, even a Roman pagan god, so to speak, as long as you're not Christ.
As long as you're not Christ.
Why as long as you're not Christ?
My mental image of what it felt like before my conversion was what feeling Jewish felt like was as though you're in the bedroom of your house and you hear this gentle knocking on the door, and you're absolutely determined not to let that knocking in. So you push the bed up against the door, you know, then you push the dresser and all the furniture up against the door and prop everything inside against the door because that gentle knocking continues, persists. I think that our Lord has a great hunger to bring the Jews to him. He came as a Jew first for the Jews. And that is quite natural. I mean, I grew up in a Christian culture. Most of the Jews in this country grew up in a Christian culture, are aware of Christianity. And there is something in the back of the mind that the Lord is nurturing. To kind of like, could this be true? Could this really be the Jewish Messiah? And therefore, there is a reaction built in against that.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your travels to the Catholic Church, you came in 1992, as I recall.
That's correct.
The Blessed Mother was very important to that conversion, not only to Christianity, but ultimately to Catholicism. Why?
That's right. Well, I had this experience on the beach. As you point out, I was praying fervently at the time, let me know your name as long as it's not Christ and I have to become Christian. And our Lord respected that wish, so he didn't reveal his name. But every night after that, before going to sleep, I would say a short prayer to know the name of the God who had revealed himself to me. And a year to the day after the initial experience, I had a dream. I mean, I fell asleep. And the next morning when I woke up, I was hopelessly in love with the Blessed Virgin Mary. During the night, I had had what felt like an audience with her. I had felt like I had been awoken and taken to a room and left alone with an incredibly beautiful young woman. Being in her presence was in itself to be filled with a purity of love that was actually an ecstasy greater than I could imagine. And I felt like I was granted an audience with her. And that a lot of things were explained to me.
Now, you said that you asked her 4 or 5 questions.
That's right.
Can you recall what the questions were?
Yes, I can recall what the questions were. The first question that I asked her, because I found myself in her presence, I was very immediately aware of how exalted and glorious she was. And I knew she was the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I wanted to honor her. And I knew I didn't even know the Hail Mary. And I knew that if I knew the Hail Mary, all I wanted to do was drop on my knees and say the Hail Mary or something to honor her. So my first question to her was, what's your favorite prayer to you? Because I wanted to honor her.
Okay.
And she, perhaps one could say, demurely responded, "I love all prayers to me." And I, perhaps, as part of my Jewish nature, might be a little bit pushy. And I said, "Well, come on, you must love some prayers to you a little more than others.
You're being too nice."
And so she relented and she recited a prayer to me that was in Portuguese. And I made the effort to remember it phonetically, the first few words of it phonetically. And the next morning when I woke up, I immediately wrote down phonetically the words as I remembered them. And as far as I can reconstruct the prayer from talking to Portuguese Catholics afterwards, it's Immaculate Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us, have recourse to thee. And the Portuguese woman who recited that prayer for me so I could identify it, when I told her, "Oh, I think that's it," said, "Aha, that's the first prayer Portuguese mothers teach their infants as soon as they're able to speak."
Okay.
So if that's the case, I think that would be another reason the prayer was especially dear to her.
And, of course, Portuguese, we think of Our Lady of Fatima.
That's right.
Of course, with the children there. The other thing was, when you first decided to be Christian, you didn't think about being Catholic right away. What changed your mind?
That's right. I mean, if the worst thing in the world wasn't being Christian, the worst thing was being Catholic. I mean, that would be even worse. I was full of the same calumnies that our culture is so busy brainwashing people with, that Constantine's sword, the Crusades and the Inquisition,
and
everything is laid at the feet of the Catholic Church.
Even the Passion plays and what happened after them,
that's right.
Which was in the news over the last year or so.
So I got up the next morning after the stream, knowing that I wanted to become Christian, as good a Christian as possible. But I had no idea how to go about it. I didn't know anything. I didn't know the difference between Protestantism and the Catholic Church. So I essentially opened up a phone book and looked for a church. But I was in love with the Blessed Virgin Mary, which meant that I was spending a lot of time in Marian shrines. There was a shrine of Our Lady of La Salette near where I lived. And at Marian shrines, you tend to find yourself present willy-nilly at Masses. So
right,
on the one hand...
connection, right. Okay.
That's right. So on the one hand, I was in love with the Blessed Virgin Mary. On the other hand, whenever I found myself at a Mass, I really wanted to receive communion. And those two things served like a magnetic compass leading me into the heart of the Catholic Church.
Right. That's where you went and demanded to be baptized, right?
That's right. The first priest, when I first asked to be baptized, I still didn't believe most of the doctrines taught by the Catholic Church. And I went to a priest. And I asked to be baptized, and he said, "Why do you want to be baptized?" And I figured, well, this is a situation when I'd better tell the truth. So I just blurted out the truth. I said, "I want to be baptized because I want to receive communion, and you guys won't let me unless I'm baptized." And I thought he'd throw me out of my ear, and instead he just nodded wisely and said, "Aha, the Holy Spirit at work."
Right, so he saw that. That's great that you ran into someone, a priest like that, who would respond in that particular fashion. The other thing that struck me was, because of the Blessed Mother's connection, when you did go, as I recall in the book, to a Protestant church, you found a certain
lack of...
That's
right. I would go to a Protestant church, and once I got to know the pastor, I would say, "Well, what's the story with the Blessed Virgin Mary?" And in the case that I recount in the book, the pastor made an extremely disparaging remark.
Okay.
And I just I knew in my heart, I'm out of here. This is no place for me.
Okay, great. With that basic understanding, then, we're talking about salvation is from the Jews. Now, some people might see that initially and say, "Well, there's the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. What do we mean salvation is from the Jews?" But what I liked about what you did is right underneath it, inside on the title page, you have John 4:22.
That's right. My great horror is that someone should think I was presumptuous enough to make the statement, salvation is from the Jews, you know, an incredibly arrogant and presumptuous statement. And the only excuse for repeating it is that it came originally out of the mouth of Jesus, as you know, when he was speaking to the Samaritan woman, John 4:22. So we know it must be true because Jesus said it, so then our job is to understand what did he mean by it.
Right. You say this book is an attempt to examine the meaning of those words from a Jewish perspective within the Catholic faith. Why did you focus on those words?
This may be peculiar to me, but I think that the mystery lying behind those words is a really a central mystery of the Catholic faith. It's tremendously illuminating, tremendously interesting, and flowing out of the meaning of those words are tentacles which reach throughout the Catholic faith and illumine the Catholic faith. One of the frustrations I have when I talk to cradle Catholics is they think Catholicism is in some sense a religion like other religions, only their religion.
Okay.
And the Catholic faith is not that. The Catholic faith is the relationship between God and man, period, right? Revealed through what has been revealed to the Catholic Church, but it is not something particular to a religion. It is the entire history of the creation of the world and the salvation of the world.
So it's that fulfillment aspect, because many times we've talked on EWTN about sometimes evangelicals or other denominations of Christianity kind of bifurcate the Old Testament and New Testament, the Old Covenant and New Covenant. And one of the things I think, if you watch EWTN and understand the teaching of the Church, it's really that fulfillment.
That's
it's
fine.
Not that at some point Jesus resurrected and everything of the Old Covenant was, you know, God said, well, this wasn't right or we don't need this anymore. We throw it overboard. It's not. It's all a fulfillment flowing through, right?
God designed the economy of salvation, all of the history of creation from the outset. He knew what was going to happen from the creation of the world to the end of the world. This entire economy of salvation is divided in two by the incarnation of Christ. But it's the same economy of salvation in the sense that it's part of the same plan, designed by the same perfect planner to bring about the same result.
Right. Now you say, I would claim that a Jew who has become a Catholic is the best person to explore the true meaning of Judaism. To understand salvation history, one must be a Christian. Now, obviously you fit the bill on that, but your background as exalted as it is in the sense of being teaching at Harvard is not in theology. What gave you the expertise? How did you go about researching this?
You hit the nail on the head, because I'm appalled in some sense that I carried this off and that it got published and that it's taken seriously.
So that wasn't initially what you were doing? Looking to read a book, or were you researching it and it came upon you? How did that?
I had this dramatic conversion. I knew from one day to the next the meaning and purpose of my life is to worship and serve this God. All I want to do is spend every waking moment and every sleeping moment, for that matter, doing what was of value in his eyes. And so from that initial experience on the beach, my constant prayer was, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? For years, I hoped and prayed that I might have a religious vocation. For years, I hoped and prayed that I might have a priestly vocation. And each time I approached any of these alternatives, the Lord let me pursue a certain distance for the fruit that was to be born from it, but all then made it clear to me that that wasn't what he wanted from me. So I went back to praying, what do you want from me?
Okay.
And it just, at a certain point, became overwhelming that what he wanted from me was to write a book. I still didn't know what the book was supposed to be.
Okay.
And so I basically just sat down to write. And I started writing that book. I didn't know it was a book, and I didn't know what it was. I just woke up one morning, essentially, and said, well, I have to write about the role of the Jews in bringing about the coming of the Messiah. I know I have to write that. So I wrote that, and maybe it was about 30 pages, and I, you know, didn't know what it was. I thought it might be a talk I might give someday or whatever. And then the day that it was finished, you know, the next morning at Mass, it's like, oh, I have to write about, you know, anti-Semitism and the Holocaust. So I wrote that.
Okay.
And it would just come like that. And then,
so would you get some of these inspirations during Mass?
Always. Okay. Where I go to Mass, they have morning prayer before Mass. They always came in between when I entered the chapel and when I left. I mean, it wasn't always literally during Mass,
okay,
because sometimes it's morning prayer. And then I had, you've been doing this for a number of months. I have all these different, like, pieces sitting on my word processor. I never thought they'd go off my word processor. what am I supposed to do with them? Oh, if I take this and put it here, if I take this and put it here, if I take this and put it here, I have the role of Judaism in salvation history, you know, from Abraham to the second coming.
So it was like a puzzle that you had the pieces of, and
that's
then,
right. and then when I was finished, I realized this goes here, this goes there, and it's essentially done. Then I just had a little cleanup work to remove redundancy. Then I didn't know what to do with it. It was still on my word processor. I printed it out. I put it in a manila envelope. I put a $1.68 stamp on it. I looked up the address of Ignatius Press on the Internet.
Okay.
And I mailed it to them, just like that. I mean, no cover letter, no credentials. As you point out,
right,
I was a professor at Harvard, but not in theology, in marketing, right? Not terribly relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought they would publish it. I just put it in the nearest post box. And lo and behold, it met an enthusiastic response there.
How long from the time that you actually sent it into Ignatius that they got back to you and showed an interest?
Well, I don't want to say they were coy, but the situation was it took them a long time to definitely make a commitment, but each time I called them and said, can I write you off and show it to someone else, they would say, no, give us some more time.
Okay. So there was a level of interest, but it had to fit into everything else they had to do, and they were also concerned with probably going through the book to make sure that everything in there actually jived with Catholic teaching.
That's right, and one of the problems I think any author faces is the book is, you know, their life and it's their entire being poured into one place,
right,
and the publisher gets, you know, 50 manuscripts a week.
Right, we kind of experience that sometimes too when people send us materials, and of course it's the most, you know, ever-present, omnipresent thing in their life, and for us it's one of many, many things,
yeah,
and you feel very bad when you're telling someone, you know, because you know how important it is to them, and you don't want to be dismissive, but it is difficult to try and deal,
okay,
with everything that's put in front of you and trying to figure out, and Catholic apostolates have limited abilities to deal with things. I mean, it's not the big financial,
that's right, it's not
money makers here,
yeah,
so it's very difficult to do. Now, you say in this book that you talk about in understanding you know, salvation is from the Jews. You talk about things being compounded by the variety and inconsistency of beliefs within the Jewish community as to what Jews believe or what Judaism says.
Mm-hmm.
Today, are they the same things, what Jews believe and what Judaism says? Or is that part
of
the problem?
Well, this is another place.
Because that's the problem in Catholicism sometimes.
That's right. Catholics don't know how blessed they are and how much they have. I mean, a Catholic, when he disagrees with the teaching of the Church, at least is in a position to know what the teaching of the Church is with which he disagrees.
Good point. Right.
Yeah, he can look it up. That's pretty much unique to Catholicism, right? Even in Protestant Christianity,
mm-hmm,
there's no one voice that speaks with authority about what Protestants believe or what Protestant theology is, all the more so in Judaism. So there is no single authority, and there's a natural tendency when somebody believes something to kind of project it outward onto the authority and say, what I believe is what Judaism believes. I've even gone back to a book, I won't name, I guess, the name of the author, mention the name of the author, but a best-selling for the last 40 years book on Judaism written by a prominent American rabbi. And I looked at the first edition that came out like in the 1950s, and he says, Judaism believes this, Judaism believes this. And then I looked at an edition that was revised, that came out in the 90s, and he says, Judaism believes this, Judaism believes this. They contradict each other. His beliefs changed over those 40
okay.
years, and he projects it onto the religion, and therefore says that, you know, what Judaism believes.
And it's not even a nuanced kind of a change. It's a fairly deep change
having to do with the role of actually divine providence and how active God is in worldly affairs. And that's going to be the danger in any religion which doesn't have a teaching authority,
right,
per se.
Well, I know there's Orthodox, Conservative, Reform, and even, is it Reconstructionist?
There's Reconstructionist also, which is, if you ask me, particularly pernicious, because the Reconstructionist stream of Judaism really casts into doubt the existence of God himself, which puts it in a class, in some sense, by itself. And then there's the on the Orthodox end of things, that is on the more observant and devout end of things, there are sects or denominations that are even more so, like the Hasids,
mm-hmm,
who really try to live, 100% out of devotion to God.
Right. Okay. You say here, if Jesus was the Messiah, then Jews who reject Christianity or Messianic Judaism are wrong. If Jesus was not the Messiah, then Christians, however well-meaning, are wrong. Why did you want to make that point?
One of the places the book came out of was I exposed myself to what's called the Christian-Jewish dialogue, the Catholic-Jewish dialogue. Dialogue's a wonderful thing. Finding common ground is a wonderful thing. But there's a natural tendency to want to get along with the other partner in the dialogue and not to want to throw fuel on the fire. Mm-hmm. So one of the places the Christian-Jewish dialogue has succumbed to the temptation to go in recent years to some extent is to say that somehow Christianity is my truth and Judaism is your truth, and they're both true, and we're not saying you're wrong and you're not saying we're wrong.
That sounds like the culture we live in.
That is part of the problem, is the non-confrontational culture.
What's right for you is right for you, but not necessarily
right
for me.
Your truth, my truth, my truth.
We agree to disagree.
But there's just no way to come to grips with the relationship between Judaism and Christianity if you don't start with the premise that, hey, you know, you have to focus on Jesus, not who I am and who you are. Focus on Jesus. Either Jesus was God incarnate, which has one set of implications for who's right, or Jesus wasn't God incarnate, which has another set of implications.
So that's why you say, so the issue is not whether one is an apostate or real Jew, but whether one recognizes or does not recognize that Jesus was the Messiah, an apostate Jew. Have you been called that by people?
And that's, I know, one of the nicer terms.
Oh, is it okay? And also, I know you reference, it seemed like your parents, at least some level of support for what you did and in writing the book. Is that true, or how did your family react?
I have a tremendous amount of, I receive a tremendous amount of love and, in that sense, support from my family and from my parents. I might say, despite having written the book, the support is not per se for having written the book.
Right.
They have not received the grace of recognizing that Judaism is in fact truly all about Jesus,
right,
and therefore they have to view my conversion with somewhat of a sense of tragedy.
Mm-hmm. For them personally.
Yeah.
Okay. Father Charles Higgins, you mentioned his name in here, and you say the idea for the book had something to do with him and a pilgrimage to Auschwitz.
Well, that was one of the, remember I said that I felt like after all this prayer, God was saying, write a book, write a book, write a book. And one of the things that happened was I went on a pilgrimage to Poland, a Catholic pilgrimage, mainly because I wanted to visit Auschwitz, and that was the easiest way to do it. And, we fly all night, and Poland is not, at the time, did not have the best internal transportation in the world, so we spent all day then, finally getting to, I think it was Warsaw or Krakow. And it was a sleepless night, so it was 48 hours without sleep, and we're finally about to go out to dinner and get to sleep. And I go down to the lobby of the hotel, and there's the priest who's the chaplain of the pilgrimage in the lobby. And we're the first ones down there, and he says, so how do you explain the Holocaust? And I'm thinking, God, how can you do this to me? All I want to do is sleep. All I want to do is get some food. You know, I can't even put two words together in my head right now, and you're asking me to go through this incredibly complex theological issue, which I thought a lot about. But I know it's you asking me to do it, so I'll pull myself together and do it. And I think I was somewhat inspired because I did a pretty good job, and I ran through a lot of the book to him. And
well,
this is before I had written it,
obviously. Yeah.
And he just sat there. I didn't know him at the time, and he said, you know, I'm a historian. I was a history major. My main field of interest is the Holocaust. I've read everything I could written about it, and this is the first thing I ever heard that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like internal confirmation that I should go ahead and write the book.
That you should actually go ahead and write this book. Now, in the book, and there's so much, and you deal with so many things talking about, the whole economy of salvation and the Jews' particular position in it. You say that prior to the incarnation, it was Judaism that represented the fullness of God's self-revelation to man. And that's important for Catholics to understand, right, and for all of us to understand. Because you make a case here that really says that God, in a sense, took the Jewish people and did choose them to set up the conditions so that there could be
absolutely
an incarnation.
Absolutely.
Right?
See, one of my points is that Judaism and Catholicism are not two religions. They are, by definition, the same religion. The name for that religion before the incarnation of Christ is Judaism, and the name for that religion after the incarnation of Christ is the Catholic Church. But it's one and the same religion. Catholicism is nothing more or different from post-Messianic Judaism. And Judaism is nothing different than pre-Messianic Catholicism.
Wow. Are you the first person to make that claim, or is that something you found in doing other research?
Well, or a third possibility. I'm sure other people have made that claim, but I'm not aware of.
You're not aware of.
Okay.
So, great. You know, we have just about scratched the surface of this book, and we spent a lot of time talking about the setup. So, if it would be possible that you could, we could hold you over until next week, and we could talk more about the book.
It would be my delight.
That would be great. Speaking here with Roy Shulman. Thank you, Roy. Stay with us. And you stay with us. Next week, we'll bring Roy back to talk about Salvation is from the Jews. It's published by Ignatius Press, available immediately through the EWTN religious catalog. Stay with us next week for more with Roy Shulman. I'm Doug Keck. Join us right here on EWTN's Book Month.